Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we're recording from the DAV National Headquarters in Washington, D.C. to get an update on the activities to support our disabled veterans. And we're going to meet several of the people from the DAV headquarters in a moment. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Sean Mankey.
When a service member deploys, they and their family can sometimes incur significant, unforeseen financial hardships. Whether it's a home heater dying in the middle of winter or problems with a family car, these events can distract our troops from the mission at hand. We have also learned from VA studies that hardships, if not addressed quickly, can contribute to an increased risk of PTSD and other conditions detrimental to our mission and a successful reintegration upon their return home. The Minnesota Military Family Foundation understands the sacrifices that our military families make during deployments and often serves as our troop safety net in these situations. This community-supported fund, founded in November of 2004, provides a near-immediate grants to our military families who are in financial crisis. Since its inception, the foundation has awarded thousands of grants worth millions of dollars to our Minnesota service members. One of the foundation's biggest fundraisers is their annual golf classic. Nearly 50 golf teams and more than 35 volunteers come together to raise money. You should know that Tom Lyons is not only the show's host, but he also serves as the project manager of this golf classic. Thank you to Tom and the board for their efforts with the foundation and in pulling off an amazing event year after year to support our troops. For more information on the Minnesota Military Family Foundation and the Golf Classic, please visit MinnesotaMilitaryFamilyFoundation.org.
Thank you, General Mankey. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. As I said at the opening, we are recording from the DAV National Headquarters in Washington, D.C. Joining me now is Randy Reese, Jr., Executive Director, Washington Headquarters of the DAV. Randy is a combat veteran of the Persian Gulf War and was appointed Executive Director of the DAV's National Service and Legislative Headquarters in Washington, D.C. in December 2018. Randy, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you, Tom. It's a pleasure.
Randy, can you share with our listeners a little bit about your time in the Army?
Well, I served about 10 years in the Army. I was in the 82nd Airborne Division the entire time. I had 3 years in Italy, and I'm a Gulf War veteran.
Well, thank you for your service, sir, and nice to meet you here in Washington, D.C. We want to talk to you a little bit today because it's the end of 2 years of National Commander Butch Whitehead, and that's all a result of the pandemic, the coronavirus pandemic that hit us. Can you share with us a little bit how has that impacted the DAV here nationally and across the country?
Well, obviously, it's great to have Butch for 2 years. Only the second time in our history of 100 years have we had a national commander do a repeat, once during World War II and now during the pandemic. So across DAV as a whole, it was almost like a year was put on hold, but the leadership of DAV has done very well. And veterans themselves, a very resilient population, they've done a great job as well.
Interesting that that hit at your 100th year of being in existence. And we know Butch pretty well because he's Minnesota native, and it looks like he's done a great job. What were some of the challenges veterans faced through this pandemic?
Well, you know, when we talk about the veterans population in America, you're talking about half of that population are elderly. And in the construct of the coronavirus, it's very prevalent amongst men, minorities, and particularly those with serious injuries and disabilities. So veterans are high risk.
Well, and Randy, another thing that I think hit with that pandemic was just before the pandemic hit, employment for all across everyone in the United States was at an all-time high. And, of course, the pandemic hit, and not only did our citizens lose jobs, but our veterans lost jobs by the left flank. Is that coming back?
Well, everything is, for the most part, is on the rise. But veterans had a double whammy there. So the Department of Defense obviously continued to have discharges throughout the pandemic, but yet there was no transition in hiring going on. So veterans not only got out, but then found themselves oftentimes without employment, along with not only them, but their spouses as well.
So as everything starts to come back since in the second quarter of this year, is veteran employment coming back? Are we able to see more and more veterans find jobs now?
We are seeing more veterans find jobs. And, you know, DAV, with our employment program, our concern isn't necessarily getting them employment, but making sure that they get employment that is best fitting for their skills, aptitude, and abilities.
Very good, sir. We're speaking with Randy Reese, the Executive Director of the Washington Headquarters of the DAV and Minnesota Military Radio. Randy, I know that one of the things that we've talked about with Butch, and we've talked over many years, is getting veterans transported to and from their hospital appointments. And, of course, last year during the pandemic, those appointments were open on a restricted basis. You couldn't just call up and walk in. You had to make sure you could do as much as you could by telephone. How have you been struggling with that over that period of time?
Well, it's like the pandemic happened overnight. And, you know, we went from having 239 vehicles out there and on the road that Ford had donated, in addition to all the vehicles that we have, 155 hospital coordinators. And in an instant, safety and security of our veterans took priority, and they were all, for the most part, paralyzed till the rules for safety on the road came into being. And once they had that, they cleaned the vehicles after their trips, and they got back on the road. And right now, we have consistently seen across the nation more and more ridership coming back.
So during that delay, most of those vans were parked, and then they cleaned them up, put them back to work. And I would guess that the one thing that you need most, since you've got all of that transportation equipment, is volunteers to drive them.
Absolutely. You know, volunteers is an essential part of the program. We were always in need of volunteers, but this really gave us a setback. Again, the generation that we're talking about that does the driving, for the most part, they are older veterans. They do have some serious disabilities, and therefore they're high risk. And even with the pandemic starting to, you know, see the light at the end of the tunnel, getting those same volunteers to come back is more of a challenge than ever. So we definitely need all the help we can get.
So what are the qualifications to be a volunteer driver for DAV?
So for the most part, you need to be obviously willing to donate your time, and that is the biggest qualification. And regardless of, you know, what walk of life you come from, as long as you are a qualified driver and you can pass a basic health screening by the hospital and make sure that you have qualifications to drive the vans that the VA has, we can get anybody qualified and on the road.
So a valid driver's license, healthy, you have to be able to see well and have a good driving record, and then be willing to volunteer to get our veterans to and from their medical appointments, which is critical.
Absolutely critical. And, you know, this role doesn't actually take the non-ambulatory, so we transport those who are ambulatory to and from their hospital appointments, and then we, obviously, the Department of Veterans Affairs coordinates ambulance service for those who are not ambulatory. So it's not a labor-intensive exercise, but it takes a lot of your time. So time is the critical ingredient.
Randy, we've learned in Minneapolis that the VA hospital has made good use out of virtual business visits and the ability to communicate with their veterans while they're at home, and that they're going to continue with that as much as they can. But there are certain things our veterans still need to get into the hospital for.
Well, you know, for those who are the most seriously disabled, those catastrophically disabled, those who are paralyzed and have those serious disabilities, you definitely have to have an opportunity to go in and see your clinician, because the little things become big things really fast if they don't have that face-to-face time.
Well, Randy, I think there's two important things here when we talk about DAV National or even the DAV in Minnesota, is if you're eligible to join, you should add your membership, your number, your voice to the disabled American veterans. And number two, you're always looking for volunteers.
Volunteers is the heartbeat of DAV. So lifeblood of DAV is our membership. We need both. And preferably, if you're out there and you've got ill or injured at any time during your military service and you're not a member, we welcome you to the club.
Very good, sir. And we'll give out some websites and some other information on where they can reach it for that. One last question for you, Randy. How well prepared do you think you are for the next pandemic, the next emergency that's going to slow the United States down and harm our veterans?
Well, given the fact that it's 100 years since the last one and the resiliency that was shown here, I think we're a long ways into being prepared. And we definitely learned some hard lessons. And with a little bit of time and hopefully funding to go with it, we'll be more prepared than ever for the next one.
Yeah, we're going to learn about some funding and some programs a little later in the show when we talk to your legislative directors. And in the next segment, we're going to learn about claim support all over the country. Randy, I'd like to thank you for hosting us here at DAV headquarters and for being with us on Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you, Tom. You're a champion of veterans, and we appreciate it.
Thank you, sir. That was Randy Reese, Executive Director, Washington Headquarters of the DAV on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. When we come back, we're going to meet a couple more very important people at DAV National Headquarters. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been recording today from the DAV National Headquarters, Washington, D.C., and we talked to Randy Reese, and now we got a couple of Marines coming on the show, one at a time, so they don't run amok. And joining me now is Jim Marsalek. He is the National Service Director of the DAV, and you're also a United States Marine Corps veteran.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. You want to tell us a little bit about your time in Marine Corps?
Oh, greatest time of my life. Best 4 years I ever spent. I started in Parris Island, obviously. And I was one of the odd people who enjoyed boot camp, actually. I didn't mind it. I probably needed it more than they needed me.
You didn't drink the water down there, did you?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
That's Camp Lejeune.
Oh, that's Lejeune.
Yeah,
all right.
Yeah.
All right.
Parris Island is a swamp, though. So, but
could have been just as good.
Absolutely. But great time. Did 4 years. Got out and got affiliated with DAV. And I started my career with DAV a year after I was discharged from the Marine Corps. And been here ever since, so it's been an excellent 20 years.
Been a great run, and I understand you manage all the activities of the DAV's National Service Program, which employs approximately 265 professional national service officers, 33 transition service officers, and support staff of 100 offices throughout the United States and Puerto Rico. I wonder, how were all those folks affected by the coronavirus pandemic?
Well, I'll tell you, they really rose to the occasion. You know, first we had to shut down all of our offices to public contact. Then we had to shut them down altogether, and we sent everybody home. And we stood up essentially a teleworking operation where they were able to perform the functions of a national service office from their homes. And we stood up a 1-800 number where people were able to get in contact with your national service officers. We were the only organization that were able to stand this up in a very quick manner. We ended up talking to over 260,000 veterans during the pandemic on that 1-800 number. We were able to access our emails. We were able to still provide the same level of representation from home as we did in the office. The only thing we weren't able to do is see people face-to-face.
Now, Jim, we tell everybody back home in Minnesota that if they had some kind of a medical problem related to their time in service, the first step is to go talk to their county veteran service officer, get a claim filed, and the next step is to find somebody that can help advocate for your claim. And that's where all of your people come in at the DAV.
Absolutely. I mean, and we're here for any veteran who needs assistance with their claims before the Department of Veterans Affairs. And that's the biggest advice I have for all veterans is seek help from a qualified veteran service organization to be able to assist you navigate the process. It can become very difficult. Just filing the wrong form can delay benefits. That's one of the biggest things we see today is not filing the right form. If you're previously denied for a condition, there's a specific form you have to actually reapply for that condition again for. So it's very important you seek representatives who are able to review your file and tell you exactly this is the next step for you. It's the proper step to ensure that your effective dates are protected.
So is it safe to say that if you properly document the claim in the first place and file it as completely as possible, that's your best shot at getting the claim through? And then if there's some problem, then you can come back and work on that aspect.
Absolutely. The first time filing a claim with all the relevant evidence is, you know, obviously the way to go. But it doesn't mean after 30 years you didn't file a claim that you shouldn't. You need to come in and still file that claim. So there's no perfect claim in reality. The bottom line is we want to file whatever illness or injury you have that you believe is a result of your military service that we can substantiate that may entitle you to benefits.
And, Jim, I think a good example of that is if you get a physical on your way out of the military, make sure you tell all of your ailments to the doctor at that point. But like when the guys from Vietnam came back, who knew Agent Orange was going to be what it is today? And who knew that it was going to cause things like all the presumptive diseases? So even when that came up 20 years ago, more and more prevalent, most of my buddies didn't even know to file a claim.
Absolutely not. And that's one of the biggest things we found is getting the word out to people about that there are benefits out there for veterans. You know, you got out of the military, and Agent Orange is a perfect example. you didn't have diabetes when you were discharged. Later, we find out that Agent Orange, you know, is a significant cause of diabetes mellitus. So you want to be able to file that claim. But getting in contact with Vietnam veterans, letting them know that, for one, you can file a claim, there's medical help out there, and that there's people that'll help you go through this entire process, that was the biggest hurdle. I mean, we did it through magazine articles, wherever we could provide that information. We wanted to get information out there to people.
So the message for our listeners is, don't be shy. If you've got some problems that might be related to your military service, talk to your national service officers, talk to the local service officers. Get in there and have a chat about it and see what you can do.
Absolutely. You can reach your nearest National Service Office by going to benefitsquestions.org. It connects you to the nearest National Service Office, and you can communicate with them directly.
We're speaking with Jim Marsalak, National Service Director from DAV at their national headquarters on Minnesota Military Radio. Now, Jim, did the processing of claims slow down during the pandemic, and what's happened with any appeals during that period?
Sure. So it certainly did slow down. The biggest hurdle was the inability for VA to complete examination. So when you file a claim, whether it's a new claim or a claim for increase, many times an examination is necessary. And we weren't able to do in-person exams. So due to the fact that VA couldn't do the exams, those claims have waited. So now the backlog is over 180,000. And a backlog claim is a claim that's been pending for more than 125 days. So if you're a veteran out there listening and you filed a claim, you need an exam to get done, and you postponed it due to COVID, reach out to VA if you're willing to go to that exam at this time. It's very important. That's what's holding up the claim in order to get it processed. So if you're available and able to report for the exam at this time and comfortable doing so, we encourage you to do that so you can get your claim completed.
Jim, this is probably a question for Shane that we'll get to in the next segment, but is the administration aware of the claims backlog? Is the VA aware? Is Congress aware of the big backlog? And what's it going to take to work our way through it?
Yeah, the administration is fully aware, and Shane and I have both met with VBA to discuss this very issue, and we're actually helping at the same time. They've given us a list of veterans who need an examination if we represent them, and we're reaching out to those individuals and letting them know that it's time to get the exam so we can get the claim decided. You mentioned appeals. It's another significant issue. If you're unhappy with a decision and you file an appeal, and there's essentially a new appellate process today that I think is very relevant, and it's an Appeals Modernization Act. And now, instead of filing a notice of disagreement with HAD, that typically had about 1,300 days to complete a notice of disagreement to get a new decision. Now, under the higher level review, it's 33.5. So a significant difference. So there are many different options out there today when someone is unhappy with a VA decision on what action to take. Takes me back to your first question of locate your nearest VSO so they could assist you through that process and help you choose the right lane for your particular condition.
Do you have the ability, if an appeal is dragging on and dragging on, to try to speed it up?
Yes. You can opt into appeals modernization at certain points throughout the regular appellate process, which we refer to as the legacy appellate process. So once you get a decision, you're able to opt into this new process at this time.
So all of your 265 professionals out there know how to do that and how to advocate for our veterans. And if they've got a claim that's delayed or an appeal that's delayed, talk to your DAV claims rep and let's get that thing handled.
Absolutely. They're there to help. And just a bunch of tremendous people who take this job very, very seriously. And the training we provide them and the training they participate in is hands down the best out there. And it's all because we want to take great care of our veterans and their families.
Now, Jim, we touched on this a little bit with Randy in the first segment, but are there opportunities for anyone that wants to volunteer to help the DAV and to help our veterans that have something owed for the time and the efforts they put in while they were in service?
Absolutely. Great question, Tom. And we have 2,500 department and chapter service officers out there right now. So if you're a member of the DAV and you want to help veterans with their claims, you can do that. We will provide you the training, the tools, the resources to be able to do so. And we want more and more people to be out there helping veterans and their families. So there's many opportunities for volunteerism in the claims arena for DAV.
So for all of our listeners, if you want to volunteer in Minnesota, go to davmn.org. Or if you want to help on a national basis, you can go to DAV and look that up and get a hold of Jim. He'll put you to work.
Absolutely.
Jim, great work. I hope everybody's back to work full time and advocating for our veterans. And great to see you again on the show this year.
Thanks, Tom. I appreciate you having me.
This is Jim Marsalek, National Service Director of DAV. In a moment, we're going to have on Shane Learman, and we're going to learn about all the legislative activity on Capitol Hill. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been recording today from the DAV National Headquarters in Washington, D.C., and we're going to learn all about the legislative agenda in just a minute. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now, here's Commissioner Larry Herkey.
Landlords hold the key to helping Minnesota reach the goal of housing every homeless veteran. We pay tribute to the landlords and the property owners who are putting an end to veteran homelessness in Minnesota. We are looking for more landlords in Minneapolis and St. Paul who are willing to stand up and put keys in the hands of our heroes. If you're a landlord who's interested in giving to our heroes a second chance, visit MinnesotaVeteran.org. Housing homeless veterans is possible through the willingness of landlords now and in the future to open their doors to Minnesota veterans and to bring them all the way home. Call 1-888-LINK-VET and join the movement.
Thank you, Commissioner Herkey. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining us now is Shane Learman, who is the Deputy National Legislative Director for the DAV National Headquarters. He's a service-disabled Marine veteran, was appointed Deputy National Legislative Director in May 2020 for more than 1 million member DAV. Shane, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks, Tom. I'm glad to be here.
Shane, you picked a great time to get appointed as Deputy National Legislative Director, May 2020, right in the thick of the pandemic. Good timing.
Thanks. I didn't have to give a speech. That was the best part.
You know, you're advocating for over your million members, and you're advocating for every veteran that's been had some kind of medical problem related to their service for our country. And of course, we talked to Jim about how they can get help and they can get representation. But then you're right here in the middle of it, right next to Congress. Washington, D.C., National Headquarters. What has been going on? As you know, I'm a Vietnam veteran. You know, we've been fighting this thing on Agent Orange for almost 50 years. And I'm watching. I watched the first Gulf War when Iraq burned the oil wells on the way out of Kuwait, and there was all that black soot and where they were fighting for months to put those fires out. And we had a lot of troops in there. And then, of course, we're hearing all kinds of things about toxic exposures and burn pits. I hope that you're over there making sure that Congress isn't going to take 50 years to take care of the next group.
Well, and that really is the big concern right now, Tom, is making sure the legislation that we do have in place, there's a bill in the House called the Honoring Our Pact Act and a bill in the Senate calling the Cost of War Act. What these will do is they'll provide a lot of benefits for veterans exposed to burn pits, as well as it'll also address Agent Orange issues, as well as radiation-exposed veterans and veterans at Fort McClellan. So it's finally going to take a lot of these larger toxic exposures issues and get something done so we don't have to wait another 20 or 30 years, because a lot of the veterans now who are exposed just in Afghanistan, it's already been 20 years. We can't afford to keep waiting.
That's correct. Now, you've had some successes over the last year or so. You've got three more presumptive diseases included for Agent Orange.
Correct. We worked very closely with the Senate and the House to make sure those got added into the National Defense Authorization Act. So very exciting we finally got those to move. Now, we got two more that we're working on to get added for Agent Orange specifically for a presumptive disease, and that's hypertension. And another one called monoclonal gammopathy of undetermined significance, which is kind of a blood disorder.
Are you sure you're a Marine? How did you just say that? Very well done. Very well done, Shane.
I practice in the mirror.
I'm not going to ask you to do it again. But And on behalf of all my fellow Vietnam veterans, thank you for still working on that. And thank you for trying to catch up with it before it's too late for them. But back to these two bills you talked about for today's toxic exposures. What's the outlook for passage? Is Congress paying attention?
They are paying attention, and there was a lot of activity early on this year in March and April and through May. And actually, each of these bills have been reported out of their committees, which is a huge sign, which means they've approved them out of the committee. Now they're eligible to go to the floor for a vote. Problem is, we're waiting for a cost estimate on each of these bills, which is probably going to be fairly large. So the Congressional Budget Office is going to have to give a cost estimate. Our concern is when people start looking at this, our elected officials, they're going to be more worried about that dollar sign than doing the right thing. The men and women who served already paid a price, and to be concerned with a price tag right now is a disservice to everyone. Doing the right thing should be the biggest issue, not worrying about how much it's going to cost. So we need everybody to reach out and engage their elected officials. You can go to dav.org/burnpits. We have a page set up there with a ton of information and a link to where you can contact your senators and representatives now.
We're speaking with Shane Learman, Deputy National Legislative Director at the DAV National Headquarters. And Shane, when you were talking about that, I see two issues. One, it's been passed. They've still got to pass these bills. But number two, I think back to when the Congress passed the Blue Water Navy Agent Orange bill. We thought that was over. But then the VA director decided I had to wait before he could put that in place because he didn't have the funding to put it in place. And so our Blue Water Navy buddies had to wait another year or so before they could get covered for this. This passing a bill and funding the bill is two separate things. People need to talk to their congresspeople about it.
Absolutely. The last thing we need to do is add more time to those who are suffering from these exposures.
You are correct. Now, Shane, in the last 20 years, more and more women are serving in the military, active duty, guard, reserve. RVA back in Minneapolis, they've been remodeling the women's clinic, and now all of a sudden, year after next, they're going to build a brand new women's clinic because there's so many of them. It's great that they're serving, but it needs to be a focus in Congress. We've got to take care of all that serve, not just the guys.
Absolutely, and VA is actually already taking steps to make care more inclusive for veterans, regardless of gender, and including passing a DAV-backed piece of legislation that requires VA to form a sexual assault and sexual harassment prevention working group that's only going to benefit everybody involved.
Well, Shane, I think that there's other groups that we probably looked over, like minority veteran population, and is that in the same situation as women? Is it just something we haven't gotten to? Is it a priority now?
Well, I think it should be, and I think part of it is if we're not reaching out to these communities and other minority groups, making them feel welcome, giving them the access to the benefits and health care they need, they're not going to be coming forward and trusting in the system. It has improved over the years. Now there's black veterans have the highest rate of health care use among VA patients, with 77% choosing to receive VA care, and with Hispanic veterans, it's 72%. So there is a lot of usage. We just need more and more people aware of the options for the VA healthcare.
So once again, if they're having some issues and if they're women or minority, call up DAV Minnesota, call your office and say, what's going on? How can I get help and where can I get help? And Shane, I got one last question that I want to ask you, and that's related to the pandemic. I hope we're past it. I hope that this Delta variant, whatever's out there, is going to pass us up. But I know we lost a lot of veterans due to the pandemic. How are their surviving spouses doing if those veterans died from the pandemic?
Well, the death of a spouse is always tragic, and a veteran surviving spouse should always be eligible for additional benefits. And there's a program through VA called Dependency Indemnity Compensation, and it's a monthly benefit paid to that surviving spouse. One of the problems is if a veteran's death is due to COVID on the death certificate and it's not due to a service-connected condition, their family and their surviving spouse may not be eligible for DIC. There is a piece of legislation that just passed the Senate that would require VA to investigate when it's listed that the veteran's death is due to COVID-19, for them to take a look and see if their other service-connected conditions help cause or contribute to their death to make sure their family are eligible for the DIC benefits.
So you're suggesting that the doctor that signs the death certificate might not be aware that he should say that this is COVID-19 that exacerbated some previously existing conditions, and it's got to be written properly in order for the surviving spouse to continue getting benefits.
Correct.
And there's a bill now that in case, just seems like a lot of doctors put COVID-19 on everything for whatever reason. So I think that's something good to look into.
It is. It just passed the Senate. Now it's going to go to the House, and we're very hopeful. And this has been a piece of legislation. DAV has been backing and supporting this entire time.
Shane, we just got about 30 seconds left. Any final thoughts for our listeners?
Take action. Get involved in the legislative process. Don't sit on the sidelines. We served as members of the military. We can serve again as citizens and help our fellow veterans. DAV.org/burnpits. Check out the information. Contact Congress. Get involved today.
Very good, sir. And if any of our listeners want to volunteer, there's plenty of opportunity in Minnesota and at DAV National Headquarters. Thanks for joining us today, Shane.
Tom, I really appreciate it.
Shane Learman, Deputy National Legislative Director from DAV Headquarters. Please stay with us. When we come back, we're going to talk to the National Commander of the DAV's 1 million members. Well, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we've been recording from the DAV National Headquarters in Washington, D.C., talking to some of the staff that have been helping the National Commander for 2 years now, and joining me now is the DAV National Commander, Butch Whitehead. Commander, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Hey, Tom. It's great to be back. Thanks for having me.
Butch, you've had a busy couple of years. Before that, you spent a few years working up through the chairs for the DAV on a national basis, and a couple of years ago, you got elected commander, and you were off to the races, and then along came COVID-19 and a pandemic, and you weren't able to have the convention last year, and so for only the second time in, what, 100 years?
Yep.
You had to be the national commander for 2 years, and I want to talk about that because you weren't expecting it, and nobody was expecting a worldwide pandemic.
Absolutely, Tom. I actually came into it like a sprint. You know, next thing you know, it's a marathon. It's actually because it lasts a lot longer than I thought. But I'm so honored and proud to be this person to have the second opportunity ever to serve 2 years as commander of such a great organization that during this pandemic, I truly feel we didn't miss a beat. You know, we kept so focused on our mission, and that is helping all disabled veterans across the country and their families, that while the pandemic, we had a lot of people lose jobs, get, you know, ill and stuff like that. I can tell you that we didn't slow down, and we actually improved our processes because of this pandemic.
Now, Commander, as National Commander of DAV, you represent about a million disabled veterans all across the country. But what does a national commander do? I know you've spent some time up in the Hill. You've testified. You've done some things. But tell us, what does that job mean?
You know, the commander really is the voice and the vision of the organization. I had the great opportunity to, like you were just saying, you know, to testify on certain bills and at the legislative levels, but also being the face, and when you're out there representing the DAV and all the disabled veterans, being out there invited to a lot of great events to make sure that our voice is being heard, not just on the legislative side, but also when it comes to different program and services and making sure that we're really focusing on as many veterans as we possibly can.
Now, Commander, you and I have been on doing this for about 11 years, and when your position is adjutant of DAV of Minnesota, but part of that, here in Minnesota, we have the Commander's Task Force, and that means that the nine federally chartered veteran service organizations work together on state legislative priorities. But I seem to recall over the last 2 years seeing a number of letters that were not only signed by you, but they were signed by the national commanders of the other veteran service organizations. So just like you do here in Minnesota, you pull together the membership from all of the national VFW, American Legion, DAV, all of those, and go up on the Hill and try to show those the congressmen how important it is to keep the promise for our veterans who raised their hand and said, I do, and serve their country.
Absolutely, Tom. It's daily. And it's daily we're reaching out what we call the Big Five out there in D.C. And like you just referenced, American Legion, VFW, AMVETS, DAV, we're working together daily to make sure that all of our voices are heard. And, you know, the numbers do matter. So when you actually are out there talking about joining a veterans service organization and how that is important, it is, because when you throw all those numbers, like you just referenced, over a million members strong membership here in the DAV, you throw in the American Legion, all that, and that voice is brought forward. When I'm signing these letters and the other commanders of the organizations, that's representing millions and millions of veterans that this will impact. So Congress, they do listen, maybe not as quick as we want, but that does leave an impact with them, and it has a strong presence out there.
And you're not only bringing information to Congress, but you're watching the VA.
Absolutely. You know, that's such a critical part of us, the DAV particularly, and how we're We're an advocate for the VA. They're very important because that's actually where we encourage a lot of our veterans, so all of our veterans, to get the care because of how quality of care they have. But also, we're looking over and make sure they're doing the right thing, you know, on the healthcare side as well as the benefit side, because at the end of the day, they're a federal organization, and then it's about the bottom dollar. And what we do is not about the dollar. It's about the quality and taking care of the veterans.
And Commander, earlier in the show today, in the first three segments, we got to interview several of your national staff about legislative priorities and a lot of issues that are important to our disabled veterans and all veterans. But I'm wondering, when it comes to the legislative priorities that you've carried for the last couple of years, is there anything that sticks out? I'm thinking burn pits and the type of things that affect today's troops that affected us old troops in Vietnam.
You know, I think there's two really big ones that really stick out for me. And one of them is actually the presumptive illnesses that we got passed, you know, for the Agent Orange veterans, you know, the Vietnam veterans, and how we've been fighting for decades, you know, to show that, hey, this is impacting it and it should have been done decades ago. But getting those three, while we didn't get all of them, we got three, and that was a huge win for us. But it also showed that, hey, we got work to do yet. They're still not seeing and understanding the big impact that this Agent Orange is having on our Vietnam veterans, which then carried into our burn pits, and now how we're able to pull that all together and show Congress how important it is that we don't make our currently serving veterans suffer as long as our Vietnam brothers and sisters did. And now they see it. They've heard our voices for how many decades now, so they know we're going to come guns a-blazing to make sure that our voices are heard on the burn pits. And the second one that's a really big win for us is the caregivers. Making sure that the caregivers, the ones that have given up their jobs and their careers to stay home to take care of their loved ones, that we got that finally through Congress to make sure that the caregivers are also being able to be taken care of as well.
A lot of work to do, and I know you've worked it hard for the last 2 years. We're speaking with Butch Whitehead, the national commander of the DAV on Minnesota Military Radio. And Butch, I want to just get into some memories, reflections over the last couple of years as national commander. There's got to be a couple of things that have stood out.
Oh, there's been several, but I'll keep it short, obviously, because of our, you know, how this goes. But, you know, the biggest memory that I have, you know, Tom, is visiting and being involved at the level that you are as a national commander, and the impact of, you know, sitting down face-to-face with the Secretary of the VA, sitting down with a certain congressional membership, and making sure that they truly understand the impact that they carry and how it's affecting so many veterans. So that was a big, big thing for me, and how I took so much pride in sitting down and making sure that my voice was clearly heard and understood leaving those meetings. The second one is actually attending some of these wonderful events that we put on, you know, in the Adaptive Sports Clinic, and seeing the impact that our services are providing for these veterans. That'd be the Winter Sports Clinic down in Colorado, or now it's called the Disabled Golf Classic, or it used to be the T Tournament down in Iowa City. But taking part in those activities and seeing firsthand our services that we're doing. And the last one is so proud of the memories of showing that the pandemic and how it hit so many people, our organization thrived, and seeing that meant so much to me that we didn't lose focus, and underneath the leadership of our DC and Cincinnati headquarters, we jumped and we ran. We ran to make sure we got out in front of as much as we possibly can to make sure that our veterans did not suffer.
And Commander, last month we did a little testimonial dinner for you. I was pleased to be invited and act as MC, even though it was didn't know what to expect in parts of that, but I think it went well. One of the things I saw was one of the tables up front was the past commander's table.
Yep.
You're going to be joining that table soon, but what happens at the end of your term? You're going to have a convention coming up this weekend, and all of a sudden you're going to hit the wall. You're no longer the national commander. Do they just send you home, or do you have some duties for a while?
No. You know, one thing that's really early on into your term is becoming a commander. And while you're going to the chairs, they make sure that we all understand is like your job's not done once you become commander. Your job is really continuing and actually sometimes getting stronger. This next year, I will become the chair of our board of directors, where I'm actually influencing some decisions on a different level. But I'm also still involved when it comes to advocating for, you know, going out and testifying on certain things. I will still be involved when it comes to those important issues. Our job never ends. You know, even though we're now a past national commander, it's just a whole new chapter. And now we're actually just helping the current commander wherever we possibly can.
But Commander, I paid attention to those gentlemen at that past commander's table, and I think they've got some things they're just waiting for you to join.
I'm a little afraid of that, Tom, because I saw the same thing, and I'm kind of getting little hints here and there about what's coming, so I'm a little nervous too.
It's an exclusive club, though, and congratulations. You've done a marvelous job. What's next here in Minnesota? You're going back to the DAV of Minnesota. You're going to be the adjutant again?
Yep, that is correct, Tom. You know, obviously, I'm very proud and honored of and so honored to see how well DAV Minnesota still continued even during this time with me being national commander. You know, I was commenting earlier about how that the ship was steered perfectly. You know, we never lost focus here either. But going back into it, now we're actually going to see what we can do differently, right? Continue to grow our service here as well. As national commander, I got exposed to a lot of different things out there, and maybe there's some of the things I could bring back here to Minnesota and make sure that we're continuing to improve the different things that we do here in Minnesota for all the veterans here.
Well, we'll be glad to have you back here, but I'm sure they'll miss you on a national level, and I want to talk about that. We've done two shows now from the National DAV headquarters. We did one in January 2020. It was a lot of fun. We met some really talented and caring people on your national staff, and, of course, we talked to some today. Any thoughts about the staff of the National DAV headquarters?
You know, prior to getting involved with the DAV, you know, I never knew all the work that went in behind the scenes. But when I became national commander and you see the work, I can't be more proud of the work that my national team did in D.C. as well as even in our Cold Spring headquarters. That everyday work that they do, I mean, I wonder sometimes if they ever sleep, you know, just like you and I, Tom. I mean, they're always going, and I'm so proud that I have such a strong staff and that they truly make our organization as what it is today, and it's the best organization that's out there.
Well, Commander, you've done an amazing job, and congratulations on 2 years as the national commander of the million-member DAV. From where we're sitting, you did a marvelous job, and we're glad to have you coming back home. We're just about out of time. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Randy Reese, Jim Marsalak, Shane Learman, Butch Whitehead, DAV's national commander for 2 years, Commissioner Larry Herkey, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Sean Mankey. Please join us next week as we talk about the Minnesota National Guard's 133rd Airlift Wing and check in with our 9/11 Task Force. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
Minnesota Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts and the latest updates, follow us at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.